Behind those cozy nights at home, thousands of employees at BP go to work every day. People producing more U.S. natural gas. People building grid-scale solar capacity. People turning landfill waste gas into pipeline-quality renewable natural gas. And people delivering all of that power where it's needed. They're part of the more than 300,000 jobs BP supports across the country. Learn more at bp.com/investing in America.
Norwegian Cruise Line invites you to experience more in the Caribbean, Alaska, Europe, and beyond. For a limited time, get 50% off all cruises and enjoy NCL's all-new More at Sea cruising package, including unlimited open bar, specialty dining, and more. Visit ncl.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Offer ends soon. Norwegian Cruise Line. Ships registry the Bahamas and USA. Restrictions apply.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Regular listeners to the program would know how much I've gone on over the years about how much I love The Death of Stalin, one of my favourite movies, and TV shows like Veep and The Thick of It, and going back into the 1990s, The Day Today. And common to all of those is Armando Iannucci, who is in Dublin because he has adapted the classic Kubrick movie from the 1960s, Dr. Strangelove, into a play which has shown in the West End for 4 months with Steve Coogan starring. And it comes to Dublin next week to the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. Armando, thank you very much for coming to join us.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, I'm of an age where, okay, I wasn't around when Dr. Strangelove came out in the first place.
I was 1 year old.
But I do remember watching it as a teenager because It was a staple of television in those days. Mm. I don't think I've seen it for 40 years. What was it about Dr. Strangelove that you decided that you wanted to take it and turn it from a classic movie into something for the stage?
Well, the short answer to what made me decide was I was asked by the Kubrick estate and the Kubrick family. When I saw it, and like you, I saw it long after it had come out. I saw it probably on video in a friend's house. I was mesmerized by it because it's the first time I saw something that was about a big topic. You know, it's about possible nuclear war and the end of the world and Britain, America, the Soviet Union. And yet it was funny. And I'd not seen a comedy like that. And that stayed with me. And I think it did inform stuff I did, like The Death of Stalin and so on. What I didn't realise was that Kubrick had never given permission for any of his films to be adapted, turned into anything other than movies. And it was the Kubrick estate who, after, you know, quite gentle persuasion from the show's producers, Patrick Miles, David Luff, agreed to put it on stage. They approached Sean Foley, the director, who's done lots of really high-end comedy on stage. And they asked me to adapt it, and I instantly said yes. Unfortunately, I said yes before I knew that no Kubrick project had ever been adapted before. Otherwise, I would have felt a little bit more nervous. But it feels right. It's amazing how present and relevant it feels. It's about, you know, a mad and erratic Russian president and a kind of erratic American president and an erratic military. They have weapons at their disposal that, if in the wrong hands, could end everything. They have a mad American general who's obsessed with fluoride in America's water. Conspiracy theories. The American president has Dr. Strangelove, a mad and erratic scientist from outside America who's obsessed with rockets and technology, who's by his side. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? And
parallels with the current day?
And so, yes, so relevant. You know, it's amazing. It's testimony to what Kubrick did to come up with something that was so timeless, actually.
But also, Peter Sellers was the star of the movie. Yeah. So, and he played three parts in the movie.
Yeah, which is easy in film because you could just get changed and then film the next bit. But yes, we've got Steve Coogan
doing four parts.
Four parts. And not doing impressions of Peter Sellers doing those parts, but doing his own take on those seminal parts, like Dr. Strangelove and the American president, and Mandrake, the RAF officer who's trying to stop the mad general from blowing everyone up. And also Commander Kong, the commander of a B-52 American bomber played by someone else in the film. So we have a B-52 bomber on stage at one point. And yes, and that gives us the high wire act of having Steve, who's an amazing performer, doing four characters live on stage with like 30 seconds here and there to change from one to the other without you noticing.
Did you write it with him in mind?
Yeah, very early on, we sat down with Steve and an early draft of the script because we needed to know who was going to play these parts, and we couldn't think of anyone more suited to it. And thankfully, he was really up for it. But having him on board early on meant we could play around with the parts, hear how he was going to do it, see how he was going to do it with the visualizations of Dr. Strangelove, and feed that into the script so that we had something organic and really funny and quite original.
But I'll come back to Steve Coogan in a moment, but I understand that when you actually looked at the dialogue from the original movie, there was only 48 minutes of material. So you can get away with that maybe in the highly visual medium of a movie, but how do you then adapt that to stage?
Well, you know, it's then up to you. You know, you and it's a great script in the film, but as you say, it boils down to about 48 minutes or so. We need something that will, you know, give you about 2 hours. So we have to write the same again. And it's about writing stuff that is in the spirit of the original, doesn't feel crowbarred in by a different writer at a different time, is in the spirit of the original, but takes us into new areas, presents new characters, new scenes. So it gives people, and by the way, you're not meant to have seen the film or know the film. It's really the bulk of our audience in London. And it was, you know, it was the biggest selling play at the Noel Coward Theatre in its history. So we're getting fresh, new audiences who don't know the film. The story is all laid out in front of you. But it's about those who do know the film not feeling they're getting something that's like just been radically spoilt by some upstart who's come along and said, oh, I'm going to add some new stuff to it. It's trying to preserve what it was about you that excited you in the first place.
I'm just going to come back to Steve Coogan for a moment because Trevor Burney was with us last night, the producer of the Kneecap movie. Yeah. He's also the producer of a new Steve Coogan movie, which we'll be seeing later in the year, in which he plays Mick McCarthy arguing with Roy Keane in Saipan. Right.
Steve, in fact, I think had just come back from filming that when he started rehearsals with us.
But you go back an awful long time with him, don't you?
Yeah.
You were a co-creator with him, weren't you, of Alan Partridge, who must be one of the great British comic creations.
Oh, thank you very much. That was all of like 31, 32 years ago. I just needed a... I was doing a spoof news show called On the Hour that then became the TV show The Day Today. And in the radio show, I needed a sports commentator, a sports reporter. And I asked Steve, who was a member of the cast, could he do a sports reporter voice? Not an impression of anyone specific, but that kind of slightly more matey voice. They don't sound like news journalists. They sound like sports journalists. And not I'm saying that one is better than the other, but certainly Partridge thinks so. And Steve came up with this. It was slightly more like John Motson. So it was much more... Obviously, he does it better than me. and the rest is history. But, it came out, yes, hello, and he'd be speaking like this. And we kind of knew there was something kind of living and breathing in the room there. And instantly, someone in the room said, he's an Alan. And someone else said, and a Partridge. I mean, it was that instant. It's like Alan Partridge emerged fully formed, like a foal.
And that great talk show, Alan Partridge, Knowing Me, Knowing You.
Yeah. And we kind of knew there was something in this. This character would go far. I mean, we didn't think it would go on for decades, but we knew there was a bigger audience.
And how involved have you been with Alan Partridge over those decades?
We the chat show, and then I'm Alan Partridge when he's stuck in a hotel, the film, and stuff. More recently, I've been really busy. When I went to America to do Veep, Steve wanted to resurrect Alan. I did Mid-Morning Matters with him, but I couldn't do the next series. But there's these guys, the Gibbons twins, the Gibbons brothers, who now write with Steve, and they've given Alan a whole new lease of life. And it's great, actually, because I now watch new Alan not knowing what's going to happen. So I now feel at long last I'm like a member of the audience. Because in the old Alan, I didn't get that sense of watching it for the first time.
I suppose many people think of Steve Coogan as a comedian and a comic actor, but just how good is he as a sort of a serious actor, just as an actor? Because I remember the last time he was on this programme was he brought out his memoir, which was a terrific read, but we spoke at length about his role in Philomena, which was very much a serious piece that he did.
And that's a you know, if you're a good actor, you're not necessarily going to be a good funny actor. And so he's got that rare kind of combination of being a great actor, but also obviously, you know, a comic natural. It's so many strings to your bow that you actually need to get another violin. And I think it's taken him a while to. One of the reasons he does Alan Moore now was when Alan took off. Well, I say Alan, I mean Alan Partridge, but we'll call him Alan. I think originally Steve felt he ought to stay away from Alan Partridge, otherwise he would get known just as that. And it's a sign of his confidence about the other stuff that he's been doing that he feels he can now go back to and enjoy doing Alan Partridge.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing him in Doctor Strangelove, which starts next week in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. But I'm also fascinated that you're drawing some parallels between this 1960s Doctor Strangelove and what's going on today. And yet you have said recently that Veep, which I loved, which finished in 2019, would be completely out of place if you were making it today, that everything has changed so much.
Absolutely. I mean, it's that and the thick of it, the UK show, it was all about politicians worrying that they might have done something wrong, that they might have broken a rule here. It's all about trying to walk back from something they said that didn't quite, you know, that's gone. There are no rules. That's the whole, that's what Trump is saying. There are no rules. I am the rules now. I can do what I like. He literally said before his first campaign, I could shoot a guy in the face in Fifth Avenue and still get elected. So that's what he said. And now we have no rules. Mark Zuckerberg has said we don't need to check facts anymore. It's all up, you know, so it's hard to do a show like The Thick of It or Veep where it's all about worrying if you've said the wrong thing when it's almost like you deliberately say the wrong thing now because it gets your attention, it gets you noticed. The more attention you get, the more followers you get, the more support you get.
How difficult then is it to confront this with humour?
Well, it's about then asking yourself, where does the power lie and what is going wrong? What, you know, so it's looking at social media, looking at the language that these people use, trying to kind of analyse it, the flaws in the logic and so on. It's about that rather than doing, it's always entertaining if somebody can do a great Trump impression, always entertaining, but you kind of feel what you're getting is a reflection of what's happening rather than something that takes you a bit further beyond that. So I think it's harder. I think it's, but anything that's good, especially good comedy, involves a lot of hard work. You know, you need to work out what it is you're trying to say, what's the flaw or the absurdity you're trying to point up. And you need to put a lot of work into getting it right.
But is the main thing for you not to sort of deliver a point or a message, but just to make people laugh?
It's primarily to make people laugh because I enjoy doing it and it's what I've always done. And, you know, I think it makes you feel better if you can laugh. Even, you know, when you mentioned the death of Stalin right at the start, under Stalin, the circulated Stalin joke books, jokes about Stalin and his team, you could be shot if you were overheard telling one of those jokes or found with a copy on it, and yet people circulated them. They felt that, you know, they can lock me up, they can take away my livelihood, they can exile me, but if I can still make fun of them, they haven't shut my mind down, they haven't broken my heart, you know, it's that. And you can always tell when autocrats are the ones who hate jokes about themselves, when they start criticising jokes about themselves. They hate that because jokes are something that they cannot control the reaction to. Laughter is spontaneous, and autocrats hate that, anything that's spontaneous.
In The Death of Stalin, for those who may not have seen it, it was very funny, but it's also very dark and very black at times.
It had to stay true, and I said when we started shooting it to the cast and the crew, we have to be, there's lots of comedy, but the comedy's from the politicians in the Kremlin. We have to be very respectful of what happened to the population.
Because it's deeply uncomfortable.
Yes, and a lot of it is based on true incidents as well. I wanted to make sure that we got actually the details right. But the only way we could tell the story, I felt, was through the absurdity, which is what Kubrick decided when he made Dr. Strangelove.
And do you think we'll ever get to a stage where we'll be laughing at the Trump era?
Well, I think we are, aren't we? You know, as well as kind of sighing, screaming, you know. There are a whole number of options and different ways we can approach the Trump era, but I would heartily recommend laughter as one of them.
And can I ask, is Elon Musk Dr. Strangelove?
Well, there are certain parallels, and not least of which is the fact that Dr. Strangelove makes these arm gestures that are considered very suspect.
And is from a foreign place and all, yeah, the rest of it, yes. Armando Iannucci, it's been great having you with us. Thank you very much for taking the time. Dr. Strangelove starts in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre next week.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Behind the delivery trucks that keep your life stocked, thousands of employees at BP go to work every day. People bringing a new offshore production platform online. People making our refineries capable of more, like making renewable diesel from agricultural waste. People trading and shipping fuels to our customers. And people helping truckers fill up and get maintenance at our convenient locations. They're part of the more than 300,000 jobs BP supports across the country. Learn more at bp.com/investinginamerica.